Come on, come all, come gather round. Come hear tales both lost and found. Grab yourself a drink with a splash of lime. It's David and Michael's story time.
Hey everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to another exciting episode of Story Time. The one that was born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, well, that's Davey Miller, king of the wild frontier.
And the one who should crawl back to the hole he came from, well, that's Michael Santel, Scourge
David,
of the
I'm
Underworld.
The leader today. David, I'm the captain now.
This is
I'm
my
the
episode.
Judge of this boat.
That's my episode.
I know, but I never let you start your own episodes.
Yes, you do. Because you always start your own episodes. I don't like the turn this has taken.
Well, David, it's a day of reflection. Happy Cesar Chavez Day to you as well.
Yeah,
which is some sort of holiday about a spicy salad, I believe.
That's okay.
It's been a
We live in L.A. We know exactly what the holiday is about.
It's a boulevard. It's a street. We love that street, so we have a holiday to enjoy that street.
The disrespect.
David, speaking of disrespect,
yeah,
children disrespected by aliens. David, let's get to Animorphs Town.
Yeah, so we're just going to blow, like, we're recording on the day the episode normally comes out. So this won't be out that normal day. This will probably be out tomorrow.
Yeah. Yes, you will not need to light your celebratory Cesar Chavez candles like David and I have going in the background.
Right now. You'll be done. They'll be done with those.
Yeah, you'll be able to move on to the next holiday.
Okay. Back to Animorphs. It feels like it's been forever because it kind of has been.
It feels like it's been a million years since you told me Animorphs.
Yeah, so the last thing we did, do you remember what it was? I do.
Wasn't it the alternate timeline book that was really big? Where
it was the Megamorphs number 4, Back to Before,
Yes.
And it was basically, what if they didn't go through the construction site that night and did not become the Animorphs?
And the question and the answer was, to surmise the whole book, was it's just as terrible as if the B path was not any better than the A path.
It's that the war happens and the Yurks do lose technically, but like all the Animorphs are dead. Like
right, the children also lose. Yes,
and so do like thousands upon millions of people because it just becomes open war and
yes,
that's no good for anybody.
Yeah, it's funny to think about that the kids have been able to keep this secret war going as long as they have. There's been blips and drags of it coming out, but like not in a like way where the other book, the kids were literally in lower Earth orbit watching bombs go off.
Yeah, and the final thing they did there was they got, like, before they died, basically, they got a message out to the Andalite homeworld. And so that's why eventually, like, the Elemist is, like, basically, like, eventually the Yurks lose this because the Andalites show up. Because it becomes open war, and the Andalites are like, oh, if they're all out conquering this place, we need to go now. And, like, that's why it ends that way.
Didn't they fight the other universal being?
The Drode showed up.
That's what it was, right? That was the one.
But they didn't fight him. He's the one who showed up to Jake and was like, it could all go away if you just wish, you know?
Yeah, there's a free will element to the story. And I think it'll play later on with these characters. Mm-hmm. But there's something about, like, the kids' intentions.
They are important,
Yeah. Maybe even and more there was so a time, than their biology.
There was a time, I think it was during the Andalite Chronicles, when Elfangor, like, the Elemist showed Elfangor, like, his timeline through the Time Matrix, and he saw the, like, timelines of these 6 kids, his son and his brother and these 4 humans, you know, all kind of converging in a bright light to, like, whatever. So, like, they're sort of universally important to this timeline, right? And one other thing we learned in the last episode was that Cassie, apparently, is, like, a universal constant, like an anchor. Like, the reason that the timeline started falling apart on the Drode was because Cassie was, like, realizing that things weren't right. Because she is partially permanent in the right timeline, quote-unquote. So, like, And the Elemist knew that, and it's unclear as to whether the Elemist made that happen a long time ago, or that's just something that is the way it is. Unclear.
And she's, but it's like a psychic empathy thing, right? Like, kinda. She feels what the real thing is, and it's popped up.
She had, like, flashes of memories of what were the real timeline, and she was like, what, that can't be right, because I remember that, but that never happened. Like, she walked into the barn and saw them all having an Animorphs meeting in there, and then was like, what am I talking about? Marco has never been here, right? Like, what was that bird in the rafter? Like, you know, like, but
has she ever had, like, a Luke and Leia, like, one of the Animorphs is hurting, and she knows based on,
well, the way they based found on the way they found Axe was that she and Tobias, like, were the only ones that received his, like, psychic transmission. Yeah.
Psychic transmission is a perfect psychic transition into our book. David, what book are we starting today?
Man, we are doing book 41.
Hot dog.
It is called The Familiar.
Ooh, like an animal familiar.
I like that you say that, but I don't think that that's the actual meaning. Here's the cover to remind you. It's Jake turning into an older version of Jake.
Yeah, and he's also got like a Power Rangers outfit.
Yeah, he's got
on,
like a jumpsuit. Like a, yeah. A flight suit or something. And I like to think, alien. If you look close, do you remember the actor from Home Improvement named Zachary Ty Bryan? He was the older brother.
Yes.
I feel like that's the model on this cover. It's like a budget Zachary Ty Bryan.
To be fair, though, it couldn't be Zachary because he was in jail at that time during Home Improvement. So it would have to be somebody else.
Well, that's what the jumpsuit's for. Okay. And then here's the inside cover if you need that. It's him in like a fancy, looks like kind of future-y sort of room, I guess.
It's funny that it's future when it looks like 1970s Star Wars.
Sure. Yeah. It's there's like panels on the wall, but then there's just like a city outside. Yeah.
And he's got like a cell phone that looks like a speaker box, like intercom on the wall.
I didn't even notice that. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So in the familiar,
here's what I'll say before you do your predictions. I'm not going to spoil anything.
Okay.
I have things to say about this book, but that's all I'm going to say about this book.
Okay. Okay. Last time we did an alternate timeline kind of deal. I don't think that's what the case is here.
Okay.
So we're either seeing Jake in the future reminiscing on the past, but I feel like that gives way too much away of the story, right? Or the kids have to pretend to be themselves for some reason, which that doesn't make any sense to me. I wonder if the familiar is, if this is some sort of another simulation or something like that.
Okay.
So it feels familiar, but it's off. And the crazy jumpsuit also makes me wonder if they're going to run into like a time traveling version of themselves.
Uh-huh.
Where they come back and they're like, oh, good,
they come
we
back
found
with some
you.
Warning or some message or something.
Yeah. But I don't understand then why Jake is transforming into himself. But we all transform into our older self, so I don't know. of the book covers you've shown me, this is probably one of the more difficult ones for me to
to, like, predict from?
Because he's turning into it's another human on the cover. Mm-hmm, like, it's easier to, like, I don't know.
You can't think of it. If you're like, he's turning into a bat, you're like, okay, they're going to be in a dark place. They're going to need to fly. They're going to,
So is the future city really future, or is it, like, in the ground or something like that?
The Morlocks.
Yeah, maybe the Morlocks. Okay. I have garbage predictions this week. Let's get to it.
I get it. We're shaking off the rust. That's all it is. You could chalk it up to that.
Thank you.
Okay. Book 41, The Familiar.
David covered his eyes like, oh boy, we got to get into this now, and I have a lot to tell you.
Buckle in, man. Okay. I'm not going to say anything else.
Are you sure you don't want to say anything else?
No, I want to say a lot of things, but I can't flavor how you receive the story.
Okay.
I have to present it as non-biased as I can. Here we go. So we're going to start mid-battle, like we do often, in media res, as the literature term is.
Isn't that a company that sells comic books, media res?
In media res means to start in the middle of the action.
Like an anime.
Yeah, like when a show or a movie or a book starts in the middle of an action scene or in the middle of a chase or whatever, and you're like, what? Whoa, we're getting going right away. What's happening? Why are we running? Like that kind
of
thing.
And then one of the characters goes in a 360 spin in the oil. They're like, how did we get here? And then we go back and see how we got here.
Yeah, record scratch. Hey there, you're probably, yep, that's me. You're probably wondering how I got in this situation. All right, so we're going to start mid-battle, and it is a doozy of a battle in a sub-basement of, like, a building somewhere. Everyone is looking pretty rough. Jake, straight up, we see him in action kill, like, two or three Hork-Bajir as a tiger, just ripping throats out and cutting people's stomachs open and all sorts of things. Mm. Crushing heads with his fucking power paws. The fight is going very badly. They are severely outnumbered. Axe is basically like, Prince Jake, we have to leave now or we will never get to leave. Jake's like guts are like hanging out, you know, like everyone is rough. Cassie's everybody. Marco's got like a hole in his chest. A steam pipe, like, bursts in the chaos and the ruckus of the thing, you know.
A perfect way to get away as the steam shrouds their exit as they go through the sub-basement into the sewers.
Exactly. Almost exactly right. The steam pipe bursts, and Jake takes the moment then to order full retreat to all Animorphs. And, of course, Rachel, as a grizzly bear, is off in the room fighting, like, seven Hork-Bajir and being like, we could take them. So they escape out to a garage door that is like a motorized garage door. So it starts lifting kind of slowly. They manage to snake out under it. Except Marco and Rachel are still inside. They were kind of cut off by a group of Hork-Bajir because Rachel was taking longer because she wasn't retreating right away.
Did you ever play the game where you close the garage door and then try to run out before it closes on you?
Absolutely. And you also have to make sure to like step over the beam that'll like set it back up.
See, you had a nicer house. We didn't have the laser beam.
That's later years. That's right. The old times, it was just make it or die.
I can't believe how often I did that and that I never died. Because there were some close scraps in there. There was a couple of close calls.
Because the game isn't just how fast can you get out. It's how close can you make it before you get out.
I never had to do an Indiana Jones roll on the ground. I do feel that's what I was trying to do, but I would have ripped up my body if I would have done that.
Yep. More controllers are coming. There are so many rushing in. Marco and Rachel are still inside. Everyone else is outside. Marco is like, Jake, shut the door. Like, they're going to get out there to you guys, and then your escape is pointless anyway. Cassie is like, no, don't. We have to get them out. And Jake makes a tough call. And basically tells us it's lose everyone or lose two. And so he hits the button for the door to start closing again. And a Hork-Bajir like makes it under the door as it's closing. And Jake fucking murders him. Not murder. Kills him in battle, I suppose. It's slightly better than murder.
I don't know. He's under the door. So what, does he curb stomp him?
No, he comes out and then like rushes at Jake. And Jake is like, okay. And fights him. Then Jake says, I looked through the crack as the door is closing. I looked through the crack and there, like a mirage, was Marco's gorilla form emerging from the steam cloud. He was dragging a roaring, slashing Rachel, and not more than 6 feet behind them, a dozen Hork-Bajir. Axe grabbed a length of pipe and wedged it between the floor and the door. The gears shrieked to a crawl. Then the pipe began to bend. Cassie screamed. The crunching metal door was just inches from the floor when thick black fingers wrapped around the bottom, and with inconceivable strength, Marco heaved it up, forced Rachel through. She was a bloody mess. Marco stopped, crawled under the door, and released the pipe. Four Hork-Bajir dove for the opening, slid, clattered, reached the door just as... boom! It crashed shut. No Hork-Bajir made it through, in one piece anyway.
They didn't make it through the garage door. They failed the game.
Yeah, they lost that game.
Their parents are going to be so mad. There's so much money to replace those garage doors.
So they demorph and escape. They leave. And Cassie, as they're crossing a street, Cassie kind of, like, dissociates a little bit. Kind of a little bit of shock, like, post-battle shock. Cassie! She was in the middle of the street, frozen. I ran back into the lanes. A driver opened his car door. Punks! He shook his fist. Bunch of no good! I grabbed Cassie's arm, yanked her out of traffic, dodged into the alley where Marco and Rachel had turned in, following Axe. Cassie! I shook her roughly. She came to. Four of them. She said anxiously. I may have killed four back there. Maybe five. She searched my eyes, her usual calm shattered. Jake, she whispered, how do I deal with this? I gently pushed her down along the alley, shushing her and looking back over my shoulder. The Yerkes could still be on the trail. Every day we're more like them, she persisted. Aren't we? Tears welled in over her lower lids. Jake? I didn't have the energy for this. The doubt, the introspection, the analysis. I just didn't have the energy. No, I said flatly. And then in his mind, Jake is kind of like, man, why is she doing this now? Like, we can't, this is not the right time. Marco and Rachel start having a huge argument over the fact that Rachel was not following the retreat order immediately, and that's why the two of them almost died. And she's like, oh, because we should always listen to Marco. Marco knows the best, you know, so they're fighting a lot. Tobias basically just ghosts the group and flies away.
Just goes to the...
They see him in the air, and they're like, Tobias, anyone behind us? And he doesn't say anything, and he just leaves.
Oh, boy. Okay. Communication is breaking down amongst the group.
It is a rough mission. It went poorly. Basically, they were on a mission. It went sideways, and they retreated. Mission was not a success. They almost died. Jake basically almost sacrificed two of them. Like, so, tensions are high. Everyone splits up and goes home. Jake has Axe make sure Cassie gets home safe. She sort of just walks off in a daze. And so he's like, Axe, can you, like, make sure she gets home? Jake gets home and runs into Tom. It's nighttime, but he runs into Tom, who's like, dude, were you, like, riding your bike barefoot at night? And Jake has excuses. He was over at Marco's watching the game. Marco spilled Dr. Pepper all over his shoes. He left them there so
all
they could clean
lies.
Them.
All lies. Just straight up lies he has to tell.
Second nature at this point, man.
Yeah.
You know? And then Jake goes to bed. Tom notices blood on his leg. Oh, hey, is that blood on your leg? And Jake is like, you know my bike sucks. The chain caught on my leg. I need a new bike. Blah, blah, blah. And then goes to bed. As he goes to bed, he can feel Tom, like, watching him sort of suspiciously, and he's like, shit, is my cover blown? Did Tom buy it? I don't know. He falls asleep. He has what I can only imagine is a very symbolic dream of a massive wall in front of him that stretches as far as he can see on both sides, and he can hear the roaring ocean on the other side.
Are we talking about that wall? And is this the Wailing Wall in Israel? From the wall to the sea is what you're saying right now, David?
No, we're not. It's just that it's a big wall, and on the other side is the ocean. And it's the finger in the dike. He's blocking a hole in the wall and just wondering.
So he's
when
preventing
the wall...
the Palestinians from having their freedom, is
God
what you're
it.
Saying?
He's no.
He's stopping them from coming over.
No.
Okay.
So he has that dream, and then he wakes up to his alarm. And he goes to hit the snooze button, and there's no bedside table. And he's like, what? And he looks around, and he is in a very different room.
He's in future room.
He's got a screen on the wall that says, to do, : go to work. A computer voice talks to him like, you're not adequately prepared for work now.
How
you know?
Fucking awful would it be if there's a giant... Like, you wake up, you know you have to go to work. I don't want my TV to be like, yeah.
And then
work time.
And then a voice that's immediately like, you're not dressed yet for work. Why aren't you dressed yet for work?
That outfit is inappropriate. You have Zelda pictures all over your shirt.
So he, like, reaches for something to, like, be like, what the fuck? And he notices his hand is much bigger than it normally is. A little hairier. Yeah, he's got man hands.
Man hands.
We're also going to get a slight confirmation of something in this book, actually.
Let's see. That he's uncircumcised? He looks down and he's very surprised.
We asked ourselves this before, is that if they morph to an animal and then morph back, are they now uncircumcised?
David, it's a great question, okay? Because I know some of them
Everything
have religious
that
parents.
We know about morphing technology means that they are now no longer circumcised if they were before.
Does he have to like re-circumcise himself sometimes? Like, it's a very difficult question.
I bet if I was them, I would just leave it. I would
just
be
leave
like,
it.
Well,
leave it alone.
It
leave it the way it came. Yep. It's a good package.
I probed the polished steel door frame for my reflection, for the face I knew. And yes, there, I saw my eyes, dark as midnight. My strong, broad face, I swallowed hard. My short cropped hair, my 6-foot frame, my day-old beard. I brought a hand to my face. My fingers scraped across my chin. Stubble like 60 grit sandpaper. I needed a shave. My breath got choppy. My head felt about ready to explode. The Jake staring back at me was an adult. Not crazy old, but out of college a few years. At least 10 years older than the kid I'd been the night before.
He has no idea. He sounds like he's 37, though he's like, I'm just out of college.
So here's the confirmation I'm talking about, because there's another point in here that I think they mentioned. That it was 10 years ago was the mission that we just talked about. And something in this mentions how they're like, he's like 25. So if we do that correctly, that means that our kids at this point, book 41, are only 15 still. Meaning at the start of this, they were like 13, 14.
Yeah, so they're like, at the end of 8th grade?
15?
Yeah, like when do you go to high school?
I
want to
say that's high school, like 14? I want to say, yeah. like 15 is like sophomore?
Yeah, okay.
Freshman, sophomore maybe? Like, right? Okay. I graduated right before I turned 18. So
I turned 18 my senior year.
So I was a freshman when I was 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're in high school by now then, right?
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so confirmation that our kids are about 15.
Wow.
Yeah. He immediately starts thinking, what is going on? What's happening? He doesn't know, is this another Elemist thing? Is this a Yerk trick? Or maybe I finally just went insane.
Right. Like, this is
maybe,
it. Like,
maybe I actually cracked and this is life now. The room is a weird mix of, like, normal-looking stuff and, like, metallic futuristic fixtures and screens and things. He looks out a tiny window, like, little, not big enough to get through, like, little just, like, view window, basically, and sees big, sprawling city, like, normal city, skyscrapers and buildings.
Flying cars?
Kinda. But also, there's, like, machinery that looks sort of like grafted onto the side of some of the buildings and skyscrapers, almost like little parasitic buildings sitting on these larger buildings.
Do they look like buildings, or do they look like organic like human vines? Or...
Well, okay. the bigger buildings are like we'll come to find out. We're in New York, so like these are skyscrapers and buildings.
So it's like the Sears Tower, and then on the outside of the Sears Tower, it has been like retrofitted with machines on it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He sees two fighters, kind of like fighter ships, like fly down through the city. And he's like, oh my god, those are Yerk fighters. And he looks closer. Oh, and then he looks across the skyline, and he does see the Twin Towers. So, at the very least, in this future...
This is an alternate 9/11 universe!
I have here, in parentheses, the Yerks prevented 9/11.
Good job, Animorphs! You stopped 9/11 from happening!
No, the Yerks. Forgot. Because the fighters that fly through the city are Yerk fighters, so we can assume that the Yerks are, like, here. So the Yerks prevented 9/11. If you remember, the Animorphs committed a 9/11 before.
It was a different 9/11, David. And it was also like a 7/24. I don't remember when they did.
He looks at the ships again and he notices that only one of them is a bug fighter. The other appears to be a modified Andalite fighter. And they're flying together in tandem. The room eventually ejects him out into the hallway, like literally kicks him out into the hallway, and he resolves to keep it cool and figure out what is happening, right?
So far, this universe feels very Fifth Element.
The other people, there are other people that, like, also are exiting into the hallway in bright jumpsuits, similar to what he is now wearing, leaving their little cube rooms, and he gets into a shuttle at, like, the end of the hall with a bunch of people, and it's like a subway or a taxi, kind of, but it, like, flies around. And another guy in the shuttle addresses him as Essek 241275.
The clearly five on his...
A yeah. Yerk name.
Ooh. Okay.
And that guy is in a green suit. So the guy in the green suit asks, hey, when is the big launch? And Jake is like, what? You know? The what?
The what?
He rides until the end of the line, at one point getting lost in thought and muttering to himself and passing it off as his host acting up. Like, he's kind of, like, deep in thought, and he kind of says, like, no, my name is Jake. And everyone kind of turns and looks at him, and he kind of looks around, and he very quickly is like, oh, sorry, my host. Sometimes I still have trouble with my host. And someone's like, oh, you know, they have pills for that. You should go to the clinic or whatever. And so he kind of has an excuse now to be like, oh, I'm not getting off at this stop. I'm going to go to the clinic, right? He sees, as he looks out the window from the shuttle, he sees a field of grass with what appears to be captive Andalites feeding, like, it kind of marching back and forth. And
are they chained? Do they have collars on? Or are they just, like...
No, but it looks like they're, like, penned in this little grassy area. And there's, like a buzzer that is, like, making them change direction or something. So it's, like...
Oh, interesting.
They seem captive in some way. And finally, he's like, okay, I don't know what's happening, but I need to deal with it. And so he gets out at street level around Times Square.
Hot dog!
And it's like a ghost town down there. Underneath all of the, I have in my notes, underneath all of the Blade Runner shit up top. Big screens that, and billboards.
There's
and,
that you know. Coca-Cola ad with the Japanese woman. And it goes, oh! Yeah,
yeah it's a Blade Runner. He does see a big like billboard that offers trips to the Yerk homeworld every like... two cycles or whatever, and it says, by the, quote, High Council Division for the Relocation of Unfit and Insurrectionist Hosts.
This is a classic Back to the Future scenario. He's walking around Future Town.
Biff got the almanac. he notices graffiti on one of the billboards, and the graffiti looks fresh. Not, like, from 10 years ago or something.
No, like, yeah, like, wet, yeah. If you will.
And it's graffiti of the letters E-F.
E-F?
E-F.
Elfangor?
E-F. he hears a shootout down the street on the other side of the square, both bullets and drakenbeams. And he sees a squad of outfitted Taxans start, like, rolling up the street. So these big fucking millipede alien guys with big spiny mouths and little grubby hands with, like, bandoliers of ammo and, like, guns in their hands kind of, like, rolling up the street.
And it's not like a fun Miyazaki world where people ride them to work like buses,
no, these
right?
are them. These are the
okay,
things.
Okay, yeah, okay.
These are not mounts. These are the soldiers. And he hears a hawk, and he looks up, and he sees what looks like a very aged red-tailed hawk sort of buzz by his head. And as he, like, tries to, like, look after it, he doesn't see it. It's like it disappeared almost.
We know who that hawk is.
And we're like, what the fuck? So the Taxans start coming towards Jake, so he bolts and runs down a subway entrance. And he finds a man, an adult man, although he's tiny, only, like, 3 feet tall. And that man is like, oh, what'd you do to get sent down here? And Jake follows him deeper into the subway to escape the Taxans. We emerged into a wide, domed hall with a stagnant, toxic puddle at its center. Clustered around this shallow, filthy water, cramped and miserable, was a sampling of human and alien life. A horrific sampling. Clumsy Geds loped along at a snail's pace. Battered Hork-Bajir, missing arms or legs or both, huddled around a glowing pit. Human children and maimed or disabled adults lay on thin, soiled mats. Battle-scarred Andalites, some minus tail blades and others without stock eyes, milled restlessly. The stench was profound. The moans were heartrending. It was the eyes that told the story, though. Defeated, dejected, living death. At the sound of our abrupt entrance, most turned and tensed. Weak as they were ready to run, not fight. That was clear. "What is this?" I gasped. "Who are you?" The fumes made me lightheaded. The little guy interrupted his whispers of reassurance to a group of human kids. "Depends on who you ask," he said. "The Emperor calls us fugitives. The EF calls us refugees. I call us casualties. Casualties of the fitness policy. But it doesn't really matter, does it? We're all prey." He smiled. "Your body is strong. You must suffer from mental illness?" I could hardly argue. "I must." So.
It's a real Civil War 1874 vibe going on with everyone bleeding at their missing eyes and tail.
They're the discarded, the disabled, the hurt, the injured, the mentally unwell, right? Mm. Like those who no longer, quote unquote, serve a purpose or have a function. Right.
Getting like, real Nazi vibes from these aliens at this point. This is
We have long called the Yerks space Nazis, so
yeah, I think this is another example of their Nazi ideas coming to pass.
He mentioned the fumes. Jake starts to get really lightheaded. The fumes are like getting to him. And so he's like, "I need to get out of here. I'm gonna like pass out." So he starts running. He tries trying to get back out to fresher air. And he runs back down a hallway to a subway platform and finds it to be a big Taxan transit tube using suction. Like, instead of where the trains would go, now there's just, like, crazy suction blowing just Taxans along a line.
So I was right about the Taxans being used as taxis, but individual taxis.
No, the Taxans are not being used as taxis. The Taxans are using, a big pneumatic tube to travel themselves. Places. Yeah.
Were those some of the tubes we saw on the outside of buildings, you think? Like they would go like different destinations?
Maybe. It doesn't really say, but
okay.
I imagine this is like they retrofitted the subway system of New York to now right. be mass Taxan transit, you know?
Sure.
So a couple Taxans pop out of the line and start chasing after Jake. He struggles against the suction to escape. Like, he's standing on the platform, and it's, like, pulling him. The wind is, like, pulling him towards the platform. He finally gets past the gate, but one of the Taxans does take a bite out of his leg. He makes it back to the street and encounters a couple of beings. And they are described this way. I try not to let the two forms in front of me. Roughly human in outline, except for a third leg and a seriously long neck, freaked me too much, but it was hard. See, each of them had only one eye, a big internally lit thing that fixed on me like a follow spot. At the center of the eye was an iris, roughly like ours, except for the faint amber and gray glow. But you know how our pupils are in the middle of our irises? Not the case here. I was looking at pupils that orbited the iris like slow optical satellites. These eyes studied me with all the suspicion of a Secret Service agent at the presidential appearance. They seemed to stare right through me. Though it's more accurate to say I stared through them, because I was looking at blue lungs that filled and deflated with speech, and two bright green hearts pumping pale yellow blood through crystal clear veins, miles of intestines coiled tightly near a swath of faintly reddish muscle. Their skin was as clear as glass or water. Clearer, since there was next to no distortion as I stared at the organs beneath. Specimens a biology teacher would die for, although on whatever planet they were from, survival of the fittest was obviously not an issue. I mean, I was staring right at a beating heart. It was a perfect target. So they question Jake. They're like, "Hey, orange suit." they question him about why he is in the ghetto and not at work.
Tell them you're there to buy drugs. Just tell them a normal answer.
And they, like, look at a little hologram badge on his chest. And Jake, in that moment, is like, "Oh, I must not have noticed that before. Or was that on me before? I don't remember that there." But there's a little hologram badge on his chest. And it displays his, like, address, like, where he lives. And his job title, which is Planetary Engineer.
That's a pretty good job.
They cuff Jake, and he finds out they are called the ORF. ORFF, and they're like security agents.
Mm.
Suddenly, there are explosions in the distance. Jake starts to run. There are blasts all around. Like, explosions start, like, kind of moving along and, like all over the place. And he sees the 10 to 20 lowest levels of a skyscraper nearby disintegrate. And everything starts crashing down.
Would you say that this feels like a 9/11 event right now,
this
David?
This is pretty close.
Yeah, this is like the thermite that was inside of those airplanes. See, they don't understand why they burn that hot. I will get into it
jet
here, but okay.
Jet fuel can't melt steel.
It's fine, David. Continue.
So he crawls into like a doorway and like a little like alcove and like hunkers down and is like, oh, and tries to, you know, survive a falling building, basically, and is knocked out. And he wakes up in rubble. Taxons are swarming around, either moving injured or devouring the dead. And he runs into a woman in a purple suit. And she, like, turns and has a draken beam on him. And she looks really familiar. She shoves Jake aside and shoots a taxon and then runs. And he's like, oh, and he follows. But she's quick. She's, like, parkouring through the rubble. And fires what seems to be a warning shot at Jake. Like, it, like, buzzes past his head. And she ducks into a building. The taxons then give chase also at them. And Jake kind of turns and is like, oh, as they come rushing at him. And they rush past Jake and into the building after this woman.
Mm-hmm.
So he runs into the building. And it's a theater. Here we are in New York, right? So this woman runs through, like, down onto the stage through sets and is firing at the taxons, but the gun is clearly starting to lose power and the taxons are gaining on her. So Jake runs over to like all the ropes and pulleys and starts just unhooking all of them. And
yep.
Shit starts crashing down onto the stage, light fixtures and sets and backdrops and scrims. And finally, everything kind of falls over the taxons and the woman. A scrim kind of like falls over all of them. He helps her out of the wreckage and then kind of is like, Cassie? And our eyes met. Cassie, I wanted to hug her, tell her everything was okay, that she was brave, that we would make it out alive, but her eyes were like a wall or a mask. I searched them for the peace and sensitivity they used to hold. Neither was there. Her lips curled into a fake smile, a very un-Cassie-like look, and then she finally spoke. So, you're not dead.
They have not spoken in a long time.
It's been a while. He's assumed dead.
Yes, if this is the response, she does not seem like things have been going very well.
He asks if she knows if this is an Elemist or Krayak thing, and she is like, ugh, I haven't thought of those names in forever.
Almost 10 years!
she opens like a case for bandages for her arm, and Jake notices more draken beams, another purple suit, and a bunch of blast cord, plastic explosives, dynamite, and realizes that explosion, that 9/11 that just happened, was Cassie?
She's a terrorist is what you're telling me. She terrorizes this New York City at her whims.
Cassie is a controller working with her Yerk as a member of the EF, which stands for the Evolutionary Front.
Yeah, Evolutionary Front, where they feel that they should work hand in hand with their hosts.
Who are trying to turn the Yerks away from parasites in favor of artificial symbiotes.
Okay.
Cassie led the team responsible for the bombing that just happened. Cassie has changed. Cassie, what are you saying? You engineered a blast that must have killed hundreds of refugees, the very people the EF is trying to help? That makes you a terrorist. How can you possibly justify that? In a war, Jake, anything is justified. She spoke with an unnerving confidence. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm not concerned with the nonsense I used to be. Like life and peace? You think that's nonsense now? Don't you remember our last mission? The Ragsen building battle? The come down? You needed to talk, and when we got out, I turned you away. I just didn't want to deal with it. I was an idiot that night, Cassie. You were on target with your doubts, just like you always were. You have to realize that. She laughed dismissively. You're talking about a different lifetime, Jake. There were so many missions back then, all just a pitiful blur of youthful idealism. You don't get it, do you? I'm saying I finally understand war.
I feel like this is where all of these adventures are going. I also feel like Rachel is going to show up in a Darth Vader fucking costume and start attacking her friends.
Okay. I can't say anything about what you just said.
Thank you.
Cassie notices his badge that says Planetary Engineer and gets very excited all of a sudden. Turns out, the Yerkes have been working for months on the Chrysler Building project, which is where Jake, like, works. It is a projector beam meant to turn the moon into a Kendrona beacon.
Whoa. Big stuff.
And then Jake says, tell me right now, how did we get here? Where are the others? How were you captured? Is this even real? Her enthusiasm settled. The fake smile reappeared. She didn't want to answer my questions, but if she wanted my help, she had to. If you really don't remember, I'll tell you, she said. You won't like the answer. She laughed again a little. Less ruthless, more rueful. She looked me in the eyes. Man, there's like big bangs happening outside because they're building a apartment building across the street. Hopefully that doesn't show up.
I mean, at this point, you don't know if it's real or not. It is a theory. It is a big bang theory, if you will, but we don't know.
That wasn't part of... I know I went right into saying that as I was reading the thing. That wasn't in the book. That's...
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know if it was or not. Okay.
Being huge noises outside my window.
I haven't heard any of them, but if I hear any bazingas, I'll let you know.
She looked me right in the eyes. How was I captured? I was betrayed, Jake, by you. My heart stopped. Me? Well, you were a controller by then, of course. You can thank Tom for that. My brother? She nodded. The Yerk in Tom's head finally put it all together. Clues, maybe. Carelessness. I don't know. But he suspected you of being an Andalite bandit, and then one night, he was sure. He planned his attack so well that when it came, you didn't stand a chance. She continued. You, Marco, and Axe were taken immediately in my barn. Rachel was killed outright.
Oh, no.
They caught me the next day. Only Tobias escaped. So, that's what's happened.
Yeah, Rachel's going to be like a Frankenstein robot. Continue.
A Taxon finds them. Cassie blasts it in the in the hindquarters, so it falls to the ground and is, like, struggling and writhing around. Jake turns to run, and so does Cassie, but first she stops, turns back around, and, like, double-tap executes the Taxon. And then they run.
She was such a sweet girl.
I know. We ruined her.
Now she's going around double-tapping aliens.
Apparently, the conquest of Earth only took a few weeks after the Animorphs were captured. And Cassie even comments, like, apparently we were a much bigger hindrance to them than we thought.
I feel like as readers we know that. They've let us know that multiple times in different ways. But yeah. I'm glad that they eventually knew that as well.
Tobias... before we get to that. Axe was made into a high-ranking controller who helped in the defeat of the Andalite homeworld.
Oof.
Tobias became a leader of sorts, anti-Yerk. Some small resistance leader. Marco is now Visser II, in charge of Earth, and has done, quote, terrible things.
Did he get it from his mom? Is that what we're implying? Like that...
Well, his mom was Visser 1.
Oh, so he works under his mother now.
Well, Visser 3 was made Supreme Yerk Emperor. And I can tell you, if Visser 3 is the Supreme Emperor of Yerks, Visser 1 is straight up just murdered.
Okay. And I bet Visser 2, a.k.a. Son, killed his mother then.
Maybe, because the Yerk wouldn't have had necessarily an allegiance, right? The Yerk would have probably done it out of ambition for being promoted.
Would have ripped that blonde wig off of her and shot her dead.
Uh-huh. Jake wants to use Jake's proximity to the Moon Project to sabotage it and I put this in all caps, destroy the moon.
Ugh.
Basically, she's like... If we can knock the calculations off for that projector beam, we can blow up the moon and it will cause mass casualties and damage to Earth and basically make Earth not worth it anymore.
Yeah. I'm a scorched big dumb idiot audience. Wouldn't it ruin the tides? And like, it would completely shift the world. Like, we wouldn't even probably know what would happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So, she basically gets Jake to agree to help, to go to work, check in, get close enough, figure out what to do, and then wait for further instructions from Cassie, basically.
I'm inside. I'm hitting all the buttons. Now what do I do?
So Jake reports to the Chrysler Building, not feeling great about this whole thing.
Yeah.
He makes his way through the offices, trying to look like he knows what he's doing or where he's going. He figures out that his badge does have his station number, so he finds it. Someone asks, hey, you ready for the big night? And he's like, what? Is it tonight? What's happening? He sits at his desk and he sees everyone like putting these like devices from their consoles like into their ears. So he does that at his and then is flooded with like 3D imagery from his screen, and like it wigs out as he's like, what is going on? And he figures out that he controls it with his mind. But in that moment where it was like wigging out and he wasn't sure what to do, others in the area and office notice and are like, are you okay, boss? And he has a pretty insane flashback vision.
Back to when his brother betrayed him?
No, it's like he looks around the office. He's looking at the people who are asking him, like, hey, you okay, man? And it's almost like in my head, it's like them saying, what's going on? Are you okay? Starts to get like echoey and distorted. And he sees all of the varied controllers around him take on appearances of like parts in his prior battles. Quote, the seats held raw, bloody, dismembered bodies of enemies I had faced in battle. Hork-Bajir, Taxans, Lirans, all stumbling toward him with like limbs missing and gouges and bleeding and stuff. He sees a rat running among like the piled corpses and just instinctively knows that that's David, the person we condemned to live as a rat on a small rock in the ocean.
Which means he's still, or it's guilt. Obviously,
they all harbor PTSD about doing that to him.
Yes, there's guilt about all of these things.
They didn't have a better solution besides straight up cold blood murdering him.
Mm.
And none of them wanted to do that. So they marooned him as a rat on an island. And like, they all feel badly about it. But yeah. There are points where multiple times throughout the series now, certain members of the group have been like, man, that doesn't sit well with me, you know?
Okay.
But he was an asshole, so, you know. he snaps out of it, and then everyone in the office is, like, staring at him. And then there's commotion from down the hall as some Orph and Hork-Bajir are, like, marching down the hall, heading toward him, led by a very familiar face.
Marcos.
Jake's dad.
Oh, no.
And then Jake starts to feel like there's been too much coincidence today. Like, I wake up in this thing, I go out, and then the first thing that happens is I'm near a bomb blast that Cassie did, and then I go to work and my dad is here, and he's feeling really weird about all of this.
A little bit like this is a dream?
Kind of.
Okay, heard.
Like, at least that's one of his thoughts, but, like, it doesn't seem that there's any way that he can be waking up, because he keeps, like, passing out and then waking up again, and, like,
right.
He's been physically hurt, and it hurts, so he's not sure. So they grab him, and take him to interrogate him, quote, for being late and in the vicinity of a bombing.
Right, okay, yeah, yeah.
He fights his way out of the Orph's grip by punching it where it doesn't look like he has any organs. He wonders, because the Orph is like holding him and they're like the see-through things where you can see all of its organs. And he's like, he thought to himself earlier, man, what a like weakness that is. If I know where your heart is. And he's like, wait a minute. What if that's its defense mechanism? And he punches really hard where it doesn't look like there's anything. And the Orph, like, and like crumbles.
he hit it in the balls. You would protect your balls.
Yeah.
You punch it right in the balls.
So then Jake morphs Tiger. And is like, oh, I guess I do still have the power to morph.
Wow.
And his dad pulls out a Drakenbeam. And Jake is then hit in the head from behind and falls unconscious.
Okay.
He wakes up lying in a dimly lit room, demorphed. And a man walks in, kind of shrouded in the darkness, and is like, oh, still fighting after all this time, huh? And this one is Marco.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Oh, well, controller Marco, but yeah.
Right.
Visser 2. They have a new yurt for him because we need to reinfest you.
My old childhood friend, that yurt in your brain is defective, and we have big plans for you.
Yeah, and it feels very like James Bondy because he's like on this bed. They drag Cassie into the room, saying that they want Jake to help them find the EF. Or they'll hurt Cassie. And they bring in taxons, a wild taxon. That they're like, this taxon was just brought from the taxon homeworld. He ate 18 of his brothers and sisters or something before they could stop him.
He'll have no qualms eating your friends.
So Jake agrees as long as they'll save Cassie. Cassie is giving him the, like, don't say anything look, you know. Cassie spits in Marco's eye. Jake tells them that he was supposed to wait for further instructions from the EF, but doesn't say that he's supposed to, like, he's working with Cassie. Like, he's like, yes, the EF contacted me. I'm right. supposed to be waiting for them to contact me again, right? Marco tells him to keep up the pretense and wait for those instructions so that we can flush them out, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then Jake passes out again. They, like, drug him or whatever. He has, there is a weird moment during all this conversation where Marco mentions being Visser 3. And okay. Jake is like, I thought that he was Visser 2, right? And he's not sure what to make of that. And then he fucking passes out. He wakes up back at his workstation and the others in the office are all leaving. It's the end of the workday. Mm. So Jake follows the others to, like, in a shuttle to, like, a common area where people are, like, hanging out, and there's, like, a bunch of food on tables, like regular human junk food and, like, burgers and pizza and ice cream and stuff. And people are, like, dancing, and, like, it's like a hangout time for everyone. And he's approached by a Hork-Bajir and told a message to slip out like he's going to go to the hovercraft home and then sneak back into the kitchen. So he does. The kitchen is dark. He doesn't see anyone. And then I froze, labored breathing, a kind of struggle for air through lungs that were seriously not well. I swung around, and there, next to the island chopping block, was a wheelchair. In the wheelchair, a woman. I'm not sure how I knew it was a woman. The face and body were grossly disfigured by injuries. She had no legs, only one arm. A horrifying scar shut one eye. The other eye looked up at me. It gleamed a brilliant blue. I think I knew right then because the hair on the back of my neck stood on end. Animorph, came a sound from lips that barely moved. A scraping voice, harsh as railroad brakes, weak as a whisper, yet strangely animated. Animorph, the password. Oh yeah, Cassie and Jake had said the password was going to be Animorph. Relief washed over me, a sudden wave. I was in the presence of a friend. It was about time. This pitiable woman, just a clever disguise. You don't even wreck. Thick wheezing cut off her words. She started up again. You don't recognize me. The arduous puffs of speech. This was no disguise. Cause I'm not kicking yerk butt. You don't even recognize your own cousin? A sprig of dulled golden hair tucked behind a battered ear. Reckless vitality still shining in her one eye. Cassie said you were dead, I blurted. She jammed her hand on the wheelchair joystick and lurched forward, stopping aggressively an inch from my boot. Close, she whispered, but not quite.
She's a robot lady.
He says, I wanted to ask how, why she didn't morph to repair the damage, but I was afraid of the answer. I knew it was my doing. I knew I'd finally wasted Rachel's life.
Mm.
Rachel gives him yet more instructions, like, go 8 blocks away to the old library, go a weird windy way to lose whoever is following you. You'll know who you're supposed to meet when you get there. He goes to the street, down an alley, tries to morph, but can't for some reason. So he then kind of looks around and he clocks like 5 Orf tailing him in different areas. So he breaks into a run down like streets and alleys and eventually through a storefront. At the back of the store, the ground opens up. It's kind of confusing how it words it, but he like is running towards the back of the store and then the ground just like opens up underneath him. Mm-hmm. And he tumbles down into blackness that like kind of buoys him with like a strong air current, kind of like those tubes. Down what feels like a winding tube, and eventually can hear like children's voices, and lands in a grassy field next to a big tree with kids like all over in the tree branches. Adults are around too, all in like linen tunics and shit, not like jumpsuits and stuff. Jake is surprised to see like all of the kids seem like healthy. This isn't like that group he saw earlier where everyone's all like fucked up. And a lady explains. The Yerkes raise children in large warehouses back in the city. Controllers like the ones you saw are picked at random to procreate. When children are born, they enter one of the womps, or warehouses, where they are held from birth to age 15. Their lives are controlled, though their brains are left uninfested. Children are seen as weak and unworthy host bodies. During this captivity, they are pumped full of vitamin supplements so the host bodies grow strong. They're run on treadmills so they'll be fit to fight and to produce. When instinct leads them to indulge in moments of uncontrolled regular childhood, they are punished. If they try to educate themselves, they are punished. Yerkes want minds as powerless as possible, so they raise children in a joyless, lifeless world where they wait for the day of infestation. The EF fights to free them. When they are freed, which is far more seldom than I can bear to think, they come here. So not great. Jake talks to a young boy. I can't remember his name. I think I wrote it somewhere. Oh, it's Justice.
I thought it was Steve Z's. Okay, continue.
talks to a young boy who's like drawing a picture. The picture is a big sort of ham-fisted allegory. I have in my notes ham-fisted allegory.
Sure.
My note says it's a big allegory. Honestly, the scene is pretty ham-fisted. The kid is like, the drawing itself is like a hot air balloon. There's the bottom of the picture is everybody in like anguish and awfulness. And there's a hot air balloon in the top part that is all like nice and bright and shiny, and there's like a rope hanging from the hot air balloon, and people from the bottom are grabbing onto it and being pulled up to the happy part. I don't know.
Or he is, whatever this fever dream world is, he's trying to get out of it, and he's got to get up away from the people dragging him down. Okay, it's an allegory.
So the kid eventually is like, you're going to be late. And like, hits a panel on the side of the tree, and a door opens up in the tree, and he shoves Jake in, and the door shuts, and Jake is like, what? I'm back out on the street. And he looks behind him, and there's no visible door.
Yeah, this sounds like nightmare fuel. Continue.
So he gets to the library. A hawk swoops past his face again, but then seems to vanish. In the library, he walks down all these aisles. He goes down one that seems longer than the others. He's like, this one looks out of place and weird. So he goes down that one, and then all a bunch of lights switch on, and an adult Andalite steps out to greet Jake. And he is so sure, he looks at it and he goes, I recognize this one. It's Elfangor.
The original Elfangor?
That's what it, he's looking at Elfangor. He's like, that is an Andalite I'll never forget the look of.
Right.
And so they talk for a bit about the EF, about war and sacrifice. Elfangor eventually dresses him down kind of harshly, and Jake realizes, oh, this isn't Elfangor, it's Tobias. Tobias morphed Axe, stayed that way, or I guess he just morphed Axe, and then aged, and Axe is like a dead ringer for his older brother, right?
Right.
Okay. So Tobias says, 10 years ago today, Jake was murdered by Tom. And Tobias kind of turns, I then say in my notes, Tobias kind of turns into a quest info bot. Tonight the moonbeam is going to be firing.
Got it.
Go fuck it up.
Got it.
Do that instead of saving Cassie.
Oh.
Because Jake is like, well, what about Cassie? We have to save Cassie. And Tobias is like,
no
time. Don't worry about it. This is more important. I won't let her die. Save one or save many. The choice wasn't so hard for you at the Ragsin building when you left Marco and Rachel to save themselves. I couldn't answer that. This is war, Jake. Sacrifices must be made. He turned abruptly and walked across the room. Alter the Moonray or save Cassie. One or the other, or neither, not both. So Jake runs out in a huff. And he feels guilt over all of this, and from his decision at the beginning, where he almost left Marco and Rachel to die. Marco's men spot him and fire at him, so he morphs into Bird, which he can do again, and then flies off. He says, I was an insignificant dot in the sky, one free soul above a city of slaves, millions that were mine to save. He sees the Chrysler Building, and like the beam starts to like charge up, and he sees all these nodes all over the side of the building start to like light up and start charging. And he sees Cassie tied to one of the pylons on the outside of the building. He yells in Thoughtspeak for her. She somehow replies in Thoughtspeak to him, even though she's in human form right now, that he needs to just fly into one of the support struts of this building. They're not super strong. Any tiny nudge will fuck up this mission. Do that. She is then, a door opens behind her, and she is pulled into the building, and Jake, like, dives through the slit in the door at the last second, like, after her, and, like, kind of gets crushed on his way through. Like, he also fails the garage door game.
But then yeah, he does.
he demorphs, and then morphs into Tiger. And then he busts into a room as a tiger, and it's very melodramatic, like a big room, dimly red lighting, with Marco like up in the top on like a platform thing. There's some Orph in the room. There's like two dozen Hork-Bajir in there. A big screen with a countdown says like 30 seconds on it. And Cassie over like hanging over an open panel that like drops off out of the building, out of the skyscraper, right? So he like fights his way through all these Hork-Bajir, and he's trying to get up to, like, the panel or up to Cassie, and Marco's, like, laughing at him the whole time, like, ha ha ha, the end is nigh, you're gonna lose, all that kind of shit. And then I have this until the end, basically. The numbers beneath the hologram. 14. 13. No! Marco towered above, triumphant, eyes fixed on the holograms, fists clenched. A scream. Cassie hurled through the opening into the red night. Bam! Violently, I rammed the Orph off my back against the wall. Bam! He struggled, resisted, tried to choke me, cut off my air. Bam! I smashed him again. His kicking slowed, his grip loosened. He dropped to the floor, his green heart spilling blood through severed vessels. I looked at the window, Cassie, and then somehow, crazily, a hand reached up. Three fingers gripped the ledge, Cassie's hand. She wasn't gone, but in seconds she would tumble to her 60-story death, a splattered heap for the Taxons to lick up. In seconds, the moon ray would fire, shooting from the Chrysler Building cannon with perfect aim and precision. Cassie's hand, the large red button standing out on Marco's control panel, shielded behind glass, the word abort etched on the cover. Cassie, the world. I knew what I had to do. No time for indecision. I saw my goal. Save what should be valued above all else. I leaped. 5, 4. Interesting choice. All was blackness when I heard the voice. A strange voice, old and young, male and female, echoing in my mind like distant thoughtspeak. It was not the Elemist. No, it was a voice I had never heard. They have strangely segmented minds, conscious, unconscious, and an ability to reconcile both. They will bear more study, these humans. A bird's song, bright sun on my face, warmth. I open my eyes, a wooden desk with a computer on it. Star Wars Episode 1 poster tacked to the wall. School books heaped on the floor, dirty clothes falling from the closet, worn gym shoes, reading light, cotton sheets. Downstairs, the smell of fresh waffles cooking. Dad, a woman talking about a doubles game. Mom, my room, my house, my... I leaped out of bed. The Schwarzenegger thing was history. My hand was my hand again. I brushed my chin. No sandpaper, just smooth. I grabbed for the phone. I dialed the number, pounded the keypads. My body ached in muscles I didn't know I had. Bring... Come on, pick up. Bring... Answer! I wanted to hear a girl's voice, deep and young, cheerful and wise. My heart pounded. Bright sun washed my body. I moved a hand across my chest, and I felt... My badge! I yanked it off. I looked. My fingers clutched air. I opened my fist. Nothing. Images still flashed through my mind. Dead Hork-Bajir towering above me, Orph manacling my wrists, David, a mind-blowing explosion, the Howler, the strangely beautiful singing of children, the stench of those condemned to death, a mylar sheath beating the wind, the scarred faces and mangled bodies of old friends, Elfangor, lightning, rain, slipping, bring, hello? Time stopped. Everything got extremely quiet, except for the pounding of my heart. I knew now. I'd made a choice. I knew what I was made of, my limitations and priorities. It's Jake, I said. No response. It's Jake, I said again, voice quaking like I'd never talked to her before. As if this were the first call I'd ever made, the only call that mattered. Cassie, I just wanted to ask what I should have asked you yesterday. Are you okay? The end.
What?
I know. Listen, here's what I have to say and what I've had to say about this book. I hate this one. Yeah.
I understand the guilt. Like, yeah. We're feeling guilt. We're feeling guilt about all of these things that have happened. But I'm a little confused about the robot voice.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about it real quick before we do anything else. So,
is this a two-part book?
Nope. I knew that this was going to frustrate you because I'm so frustrated with this book. For a couple reasons. One, you weren't wrong when I think you said it was like maybe a simulation or something. That has to have been whatever this just was. Partially because we see that, like, certain things didn't maintain consistency, right? Marco was Visser 2, but then he was Visser 3. I didn't have a badge, but then I had a badge. Like, I can morph. I can't morph. I can morph again. Like, there are all sorts of things that were... Yeah. The beings, the robot voice, the beings that were here, we don't really get a name for because they will never come up again. We don't know. This doesn't get resolved. This doesn't get called back to.
Did the kids
fight
them? Are these the robots?
It's a voice he's never heard before.
I thought, as you were reading, I kept thinking that, like, that Tom did figure him out, and this was the means of seeing what the information was.
No, nope. And even that was an inconsistent detail because at first it was Tom figured you out and then captured you, Marco, and Axe. And then Tobias is like, Tom figured you out and murdered you in your sleep.
Right, which isn't true.
Neither of those, you know, like, so... Everything being too convenient, like, the sort of, like, melodramatic way of, like, big ticking clock countdown with your two choices as, like... clear as day and unsubtly as possible, save Cassie or save the world, right? Like, it's that kind of a test, almost. And the thing that frustrates me the most is that it never comes up again. We don't know. We never get resolution. We never find out.
Is there a Reddit thread?
That's where I confirmed that we never find out. I went and looked it up. I forum dove on this one because I was like, I don't remember these guys at all. Like, what the hell? From when I read the books a long time ago. And it turns out the reason I don't remember is because it doesn't make any sense and doesn't ever come up again. So this book frustrates me for that. It also frustrates me because we just had this storyline where in the last Megamorphs, where it's like, we wake up and things are different and oh no, and it's a what if, and then we revert back to normal. And in this, we wake up and things are different and oh no, and then we revert back to normal. And like, while reading this, I was like bored because we've just had this, frustrated because it was confusing, extra frustrated because it's now not important. And then like, you know, it just, I didn't like this book. And in my forum diving, I have found that pretty much across the board, hands down, everyone agrees, this is the worst one.
I hear all of your complaints. I resonate with all of them. I feel like they just missed the landing. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't do the landing of, oh, this is what it could have been, because we literally just fucking did that.
Yep.
But I would love to know...
But we've also had, like, let's see the future, and oh no, let's stop that future. Like, we've also had that before as well. So, like, I don't know. It just... This one, to me, feels like one of the most ghost-written books in the series that I've read.
Yeah, and I also don't know. Okay, so the next book, I'm assuming the kids meet in the barn, go and do some adventure, and never, ever refers back to this book again, correct? Because you said we never find out what the answer is to any of this shit.
Right,
which is very disheartening.
Yeah. It's just a bummer of a book that, like, leaves you confused, and then you don't get to be unconfused. So, more or less, take it as it was and then forget about it is kind of how I have to deal with it. I
guess maybe it should have just been a nightmare. Like, why not just then have it be a Wizard of Oz dream?
Yeah.
Why have the robot voice?
Maybe we tried and we decided, never mind, we're not going to go there.
Yeah. There's a, I don't know, all the books have had a certain level of quality control. Maybe this one, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So
I'm not angry with the story. I can see why you are frustrated reading it because you're like, okay, I have to keep track of all of this. But at the end of the day, no, you fucking don't.
Well, and like halfway through the book, I was like, we just went through this. So this isn't exciting or novel. And then I know that basically all I'm doing is getting to the end of the book so that we can hit the reset button, I assume. And I was right. And so it's like, okay.
Do you think it would have been...
So all of the threats and things during the book didn't hit at all to me as threatening because I knew we don't continue on in this version of the world for the rest of the series or anything. This wasn't a time jump. Where we then, that's
it. Is there any way this is an alternate timeline or anything? Like he...
I mean, technically, yes.
The kids are kind of psychic. Like, is there any way that this is like a future world that might happen?
I think yes, but also it's clearly like a fabricated thing because of the mistakes that keep happening and then the voices at the end that are like, ooh, we'll have to investigate this further. Like... So it's not even a like mystical, like that was the future for sure. Because none of it was consistent even with itself. So it couldn't have been true.
I thank you for letting me know that this is a garbage book. I don't need to go more into
it. But that's why I wanted to do it after the story. Because otherwise we would have just been grumbling about it the whole time.
Yeah, I was never confused by what was going on. I just didn't understand how we got to this world. And I don't think they did a good job. Everything they told us about its existence was inconsistent.
Every part of reading this book felt difficult to understand how we got from one place to the other, or even as they're describing locations, it's like, I was having a hard time picturing it, or like, you know, just like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a mixture of The Matrix and Escape from New York and maybe...
Blade Runner Fifth Element.
The and Time like, Machine. Yeah, like there's just a lot of sci-fi going on here.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't hit. If you enjoyed that story, audience, or if you read this book and were like, that's my favorite one, like, cool, great. I hated it.
Mm. Well, as much as I hated it, that being said, I still learned things. So let's go to lessons.
Let's do it.
Lessons.
My first lesson. If the main basement can't be there, you will need to hire a sub-basement to watch the children. It's always the day you act crazy and stuff like that, but like, make sure that's in your payroll. I wrote, gorillas love mist. They hide in it. They play in it. It's like just very scary to see a gorilla come through that mist. David, we gotta get these punks off the streets. They're ruining things out there. I'd like a nice evening with my wife, but these punks are causing chaos everywhere. if you take away my treats, that's a retreat. You're taking it away from me. That's not what I wanted. I only want full treats, not retreats.
Wouldn't a retreat be you get a treat again?
No, I thought it was you taking it away.
No, it's you get a second treat. You got a treat, and now you're gonna retreat.
I wrote, bikers are bloody guys. They fall off, rocks hit them, birds hit them. I mean, they're just like, of all the like modes of transportation, they are bloody people just in general.
Sure.
I wrote, man hands are scary. Like, I very often will wake up and look at my hands and give myself a like a, huh, like, oh yeah, that's what they look like. Your bodies go through crazy changes when you get older, so you just have to be prepared for those things.
Yeah, and especially now, I mean, this has nothing to do with being older, but I have a cat now, so in addition to having older hands, I have, like, all these just little scrapes and cuts sometimes on my hands.
Well, you're a biker, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm a bloody boy.
25 is a great age. 4, renting cars. It's really only it's the last kind of adult thing you get
to do. It's the last age gate. And it's so funny to me how that last age gate is the most underwhelming one, right?
Yes.
Getting to vote, getting to buy cigarettes, getting to look at porn legally. Sure, like, those are 18. Getting to drink, 21. Getting to rent a car, like...
Listen, I feel like we should have another one. Like, at 40, you're allowed to get, like, bulldozers. Like, listen, we feel you have enough time to understand the responsibility.
I love that the older... When you hit 40 is, you've been around the world long enough to know what needs to be destroyed.
Yeah. You're either allowed to build or destroy at your discretion. I wrote, not all timelines have 9/11. We're in the timeline of 9/11, yeah, but there's other timelines where it didn't happen.
Certainly true.
I wrote, just lie about dates that you don't know. If someone says, are you coming to the birthday party coming up? Just say yes and then go Google it afterwards. You don't need to, you don't need to make an awkward conversation in the moment. I wrote, if you're having insurrection problems, you need to see a doctor. They have blue pills for this. You need to not be ashamed about this. Go and see a medical professional. There's a lot of great things that we can do. Your love life is important to those medical professionals.
Did you hear about the big outbreak of insurrection problems a couple years ago?
No, what happened?
They stormed the Capitol.
David, you can't run from your taxes. Listen, it's right around the corner. If you have not paid your taxes yet, you gotta do it. They'll get you. They'll get you like they're gonna get Puff Daddy, okay? You gotta pay those taxes. I wrote, be careful around suck tubes. They're sucking, they're pushing, they're falling. You might fall into one. Nothing's gonna stop you. Be careful with those suck tubes.
And we're gonna say this. I'm just gonna say it. Don't put any body parts into suck tubes.
Yeah, you think it's funny because it leaves like a funny mark on your arm? You're going to hurt yourself with that.
Yeah, I'm saying don't fuck a vacuum cleaner is what I'm saying.
Oh, got it. Okay, well, I'm not willing to say that. I would just say keep it on the low setting. I wrote, he who lives in a glass body should not be throwing rocks. They're going to see exactly where to throw them inside of you. You're going to get rocks all over your body in places you don't want to be. Now, this came up in our story. It doesn't necessarily have to do it, but I've said it before and I'll say it again. Investigate 9/11. We've never looked into it thoroughly enough.
We've never looked into it, he says.
I wrote, if you're going to get your hair cut, think about a buzz. Buzz that head. Buzz it right by. You can get a nice little thin cut. Listen, I get you're going to look like a military guy. It'll grow back. It's just something to try.
Whenever I go get my hair cut, I always tell them before they start, because I'm always like, I always forget what, like, number to tell them or like how short to cut it.
David, and so threes on the side, finger length up top.
No, I think I usually do like a 6 and a 7 or something like that.
Okay.
But basically I tell them it's okay if you cut it too short, it'll grow back. It's fine. I'm not going to be mad about it.
You're very kind to your barbers.
Yeah.
I wrote the Chrysler building. It has risen. They finished it, David. It's up in the air. I wrote, always double tap. Make sure they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, don't touch women's weaves. You don't know what they did to get that. There might be some sort of protocol. Leave that hair alone.
Where'd that one come from?
I wrote, Davids are the worst. They're just the worst.
That's a lesson we've heard many times on this show.
Burger, pizza, dancing, that's a party if I've ever that's heard a party. That sounds like a wonderful get-together.
Especially if you're like 15, that's what you consider a party.
Mm-hmm. He fell into that ground out of nowhere where he just fell into a hole.
Super
weird. The only thing that I could equate that to was the movie Labyrinth, so be careful for ugliettes. They're all over the place and you don't know how you're going to get out of them.
Okay.
I said, listen... Do not beat yourself up for your choices in the past. That being said, you need to work through your guilt. Okay, it is eating you up inside. If you do not work through it, it is only going to cause problems down the line. I wrote, I learned the lesson that we need to secure our buildings and bridges. One little knock is knocking them the fuck down, David. This is a problem and will be a problem into the future. We need to look into infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my final note, probably one of my most garbage lessons. I mean, not this lesson in particular, but all of these lessons in general. I wrote, the end is nigh is the evil version of Bill Nye the Science Guy. One is working towards the betterment of mankind, and end nigh is like a being of destruction that goes from planet to planet, who Bill Nye has to fight for global supremacy. Dare I say, universal supremacy. That being said, we do not support supremacists here, which is why we've never watched The Bourne Supremacist. David, those are all of my lessons.
I will agree with you that that last joke was okay.
Thank you, David. I appreciate that. Now, you got up near the end of our reading.
Yeah, because I always forget to get the next book.
What is book 42?
Man, we're going to go from that to this. I'm kind of excited about it. It's book 42. It is called The Journey. And here's the cover. We've got Rachel. She's turning into an elephant. So nothing super surprising. I'm going to let you know
that second face is the most horrific woman I've ever seen. Yeah. That's a scary lady right there.
Yeah, it's kind of like how you'd imagine like someone drawing like a goblin or like an orc lady.
Yeah.
But with a different with gray skin.
Yeah, you remind me of the babe of power. Ooh! There's an Andalite and a lizard man.
There's an Andalite, that's a Hork-Bajir.
Yeah.
And an elephant there. And then they're in somewhere with like gooey walls.
Yeah, I think they're in somebody's body.
Huh. Interesting. And it's called The Journey.
Ooh, we're going up the urethra into the body, just like some sort of poison fish. Well, David, it feels like a million years, and I'm glad we have finished this journey, continue it next time.
See, the other thing that was crazy is that, like, when we had this whole unintended, like, month off from doing episodes, I knew I had this book to come back to, and I was so not excited about it because I hated this one.
I appreciate the work and dedication that you've done so that we can get through it.
Yeah.
We'll have a dump truck noise or like garbage noises. Like you'll hear a beeping and it's like, oh, okay, this is a garbage episode, everyone. Just so you know.
I don't know. It's fine. I mean, I didn't want to like preface the episode with it because that would taint everyone's reception of the story. That said, it's tainted.
For sure. Well, David, thank you so much for tainting all of us today with your words and thoughts. No problem. Thank you all for listening out there in listener town. Thank you for enjoying another episode of the Storytime Animorphs Edition. The one with the beautiful taint. Well, that's David Miller.
And the one whose remains to be seen. Well, that's Michael Santel.
Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. And we'll see all you kids and cats next time.
Okay, bye. You haven't seen my tank, have you?
That's our show. Thanks for coming round. Don't be sad. No need to frown. We'll have more stories. Don't throw a fit. Goodbye, one and all, and we'll see you in a bit.
Where are we?